the door is down.
We'll go ahead and get started with the round table. And the first up today is Mrs. Johnson.
I'll start off slow. I just want to bring to everybody's attention, and I know I did leave a message for Dr. Adams, but we ran into a situation that we've run into a couple of times, and that is adult ed scheduling their graduation at the same time as one of the high schools. And I think I left that message with Ms. Poisel to see.
I got it.
Okay. Are they willing to do anything to change, or can they please make a note for next year, which is what we've asked for 2 years in a row?
I'm meeting with the principals tomorrow, or Thursday morning, okay. And it's on the, you know. What happened is one of the three changed their times and didn't notify the other. Sebastian River High School, in case you don't know, it has a morning graduation this year. So adult ed was scheduled at the same time, and so they weren't notified.
Well,
see? It's usually in the evening.
That's why we need the rest of the story.
Yeah, they usually have it in the evening at 7, so there's usually no conflict. So Mrs. Shaw is going to change, but they just need to notify each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know? So how do we ensure that this doesn't happen again?
I'm going to put it on the principals to notify each other about when their graduations are, particularly if it's changing. Usually it's the same. It's Friday or Saturday, you know. But adult ed.
I thought it was when Mr. McCain was chairman that he asked me to go to the adult ed instead of the Verbeach High Schools, and I was happy to do that, but wasn't thrilled. But we did need representation.
And they were both at the same time?
Yeah. That's already happened once.
At 7
That's
o'clock at night?
No, it was in the morning.
Oh, okay.
It was the morning.
Okay.
Vero was rained out.
Oh, no. And then it was going to be scheduled.
Okay.
So
all right.
No, Vero Beach is still 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Well, no, not
yes.
Right.
Do you want to say something else?
Okay.
Yes. When Dr. Pritchett was here, we had asked if he would put together a district-wide calendar, but his tenure wasn't long enough to complete the task, and we had asked the next superintendent, it didn't get done, so I don't know if it's something you'd like to consider, a district-wide calendar, because so many things are overlapped on board meeting nights, and I know there's just so many days in a week, and they try to stick to Tuesday and Thursday, but a district-wide calendar would give principals the opportunity to refer to it before they schedule things.
I'll look at what that means. I'm thinking
and
who's going to do it.
And my part B on that with conflicts was I think that we need to make certain that department heads understand that we would prefer that any time there's an important meeting, such as the Beachland meeting, that it not be held on a scheduled school board meeting night. We do understand that there's times when conflicts cannot be helped. I mean, we know there's only so many days in the month, and we're going to have multiple graduations on the same day, night, whatever it happens to be, but something as important as that should not have occurred on a school board meeting.
And I think as a follow-up, because I understood when this meeting was called that it was a city, you know, the city had something to do with it.
City required them to have
right, so even if that's the case, staff should be able to have the foresight to say that is a school board meeting night and we really would prefer not to do it. So even though it may not be their meeting requirement, they should be paying attention to what the needs are for the
board. Just the county has some similar requirements for anytime there's a DR, development, regional impact, whatever it happens to be. Those things are required, but they do not require a specific date.
Right.
That is not part of that requirement.
Okay.
It's part of the process to get approval.
I know, I'm just saying that because that was the response I got.
I want to clarify that's not a good excuse. Okay.
Thanks.
I'm done.
Is there a seat?
No, sir.
I got it.
Mrs. Disney?
Well, that was my first item. That was to talk about the meeting in Beachland and that we are unable to attend. And, you know, the couple calls I got were not very pleasant. I guess they hadn't heard we had a meeting also. And so they felt that we were just blowing their meeting off. And that was really unfortunate because once it was scheduled, the very first thing that should have been said at the introduction is board members are in a board meeting mm-hmm. and are not able to attend, because they gave, it gave the impression that we weren't interested in the issue, and that, as you know, is not true.
One
of
the things.
It was a done deal.
Yeah.
Right.
Which it turned out it wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, but that was the impression for sure. One of the things that I thought I could do tonight, because they have scheduled a meeting for, I had asked Mrs. Olson today, April 25th, I think that's a Thursday, does that sound right? At 7 p.m., huh?
That'd be a Wednesday.
Okay.
Yes,
17
is tax, that's a Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah, that one down.
It's a Wednesday.
Okay. And I will email it to you, but I think she sent it to me. And I was going to announce that tonight, give people a brief update on the Beachland, you know, that it has been looked at again. There is a change in what's happening that does not impact, you know,
The hammock,
and there is another meeting scheduled for, and I will give the date and the time.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. And I think that's important, because the facilities report is not current. And so if we're not mindful that when, especially when you have hot topics like this, if our information is not current, and I understand that staff has deadlines, and sometimes because of the deadlines you can't be as current, but we need to be paying attention, because those are the things that can be misconstrued as the board is not being forthright. You know, their report did not address our issue. So I'm really glad that it's going to be explained tonight. At the board meeting.
Well, Chairman, I was just going to make the suggestion that, judging from some of the emails out there, we're going to have some folks in attendance tonight that want to speak to the issue.
Maybe we should explain it beforehand.
I'm thinking.
I agree.
Yeah.
I thought of that.
Okay. Yeah.
On the same page.
Okay.
Because people are going to get up and.
Sure.
And you did that once before. I can't remember what issue it was, but you said that we had, you know, so people know we're taking a different tack with this, so you don't get up
and... I had had a call sent to me on that very issue.
Okay.
And so that was resolved, so they know there's another meeting, but we can...
That's a good idea.
Great idea. Should I do it...
Prior to
citizens. Prior to citizens,
yeah,
right. Okay.
That's what Ms. Payne did last year.
Is that it for that issue?
Yes, I'll go away to the next one.
Okay. Ms. Jimenez.
Yes, I put the pupil progression plan on the agenda, and I actually have an A and a B on this. let's preempt that. My A, and I have talked to Dr. Adams about this, but I thought it would be worthwhile to share this concern with all of you, because this is something that we all approve. And this is something that was going on when my children were at Vero Beach High School, so I'm very aware of the issue. And there's a situation with the seniors. When they, at senior year, they have some courses that are half semester courses. So, for example, economics, you take it half a semester, and government, you take the other semester, you could do government economics, and there are other classes. But in these particular situations, there is a waiver only for the second semester exam. So if you take government the second semester, there's a waiver to that exam. If you take economics the second semester, there's a waiver to that exam. But if you take economics or government the first semester, there is no waiver. And so you're talking about an economics course either first semester or second semester. And in my perception, I believe that there is an inconsistency in providing a waiver, because one semester you get it, the other semester you don't, and they're not a full year course, even though I understand that if you take English, you get half a credit the first semester for that English course and half a credit for that semester, for the English course the second semester, but I think you might agree with me that we're talking about two different things, because it's an economics course, you take it in a semester, you finish, and a government course, you take it in a semester, you finish. So I just wanted to bring that up, because that is something that is, you know, it's like a perk to the seniors. And it just seems to me that we're being inconsistent in giving a waiver one semester and not the other. Because I could take government the first semester and then I won't get the waiver. If I take it the second semester, I get the waiver. And that is some of that language is in the pupil progression plan, and I don't know if there's anything that can be done to address it to make it fair. And Dr. Adams has a different opinion on it, but that's great, because this is how we move things forward. We just need to bring them up and talk about them. So we had that conversation
right.
today.
It's called a senior privilege. You know, at the end of their last semester, they have the option, if they meet certain criteria in their last semester courses, that they don't have to take the final exam. They have to meet a grade point, no absences, no unexcused absences, and have a minimum of a grade in the topics that they're taking. It's called a senior privilege. It's the last semester of their senior year, and regardless of what you're taking, that's basically when it occurs. Government and economics is broken up into two semesters. You know, the discussion that we had is, it really wouldn't matter what you were taking. It's really that second semester in the senior year that you get that privilege. And
that applies to all
seniors.
All curriculum?
Yes.
All curriculum?
Yes.
Math, science?
Yes.
Language?
Mm-hmm. All curriculum. It's been in the board rule for years and years and years.
Do you also waive the exam for students because of the grading chart? If their exam grade doesn't affect their final grade, do they waive the exam for that?
There's very specific criteria in there. They have to look and see exactly what it is. But it's the language is the same language has been there for a long time. But you know, the same criteria. What Mrs. Jimenez is arguing is first semester, giving some credit for a course that's taking first semester rather than just looking at second semester in the area of government and economics, because those are both required courses. You have to have those to graduate.
Is your concern that one class is easier, harder than?
Well, I think that in a way that's irrelevant, but I do hear, because I have heard students talk about it. They've been bringing it up at the SAC committee. At Vero Beach High School in particular, and it, you know, what some of them say is that, for example, the economics is a little bit more challenging, and so everybody tries to take economics second semester, but they can't all take it second semester, so some of them take it the first semester, and they have to take the exam. You know, and it's just, to me, it just seemed like it was inconsistent, and I think the students are seeing it, and they've been trying to speak up and say, you know, we would like it to be, for them, you know, consistent. But I just wanted to bring it up because I know when my kids were in school, I also heard those conversations, and I was trying to understand why it was one semester and not the other.
It's just senior privilege.
Yeah. Mrs. Disney?
Has the Grading Practices Committee talked about this issue? Mm. Is it appropriate to send it to them?
They could talk about it, sure. Mm. Yeah.
Mrs. Johnson?
Well, I guess I did ask the right question for where I'm headed with this, and that is, it doesn't matter what your course is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It is a senior privilege.
That's
just like
correct.
Going off campus used to be a senior
That's
privilege.
Correct.
The alternative to not having that opportunity for your second semester is we don't let anybody have that by.
No.
And I would not want that. I think that there are certain times, meeting certain criteria, where it's certainly appropriate, but to then change a policy that was grade specific to curriculum specific, I would really like other input other than just the fact that it's mm-hmm. those two areas.
And the PERC itself comes from not just a grade, but attendance.
Right,
you know,
right. You said there's other things that are involved.
Unexcused. And I will tell you, it's quite an ordeal for them to check all the seniors who meet that criteria to be sure that they don't have the unexcused absences, you know.
Yeah.
So, it kind of extending that out into another semester creates more, you know.
But I still go back to my original argument. You're changing the intent of the original privilege
mm-hmm.
from being one with grade-related, attendance-related.
Right.
You're
to a
content, and
I
find
I
that,
that
a little difficult
mm-hmm.
to... I mean, I understand
mm-hmm.
but I would find that a little difficult to support, because I think I could probably make an equal argument with some other. I just think we're opening up, we're headed in a different direction than what the original intent
was. Is it fair to say that that probably started, that when that was probably started, was part of the idea, however many years ago, wasn't there when I was there? Part of the theory was, is kids were already accepted to colleges. The ones who were college bound were already accepted.
It could have been. You know, it's been there since for a long time. It really has been there for quite a long time. Because you are right, particularly students who qualify not to take these exams, they're the ones that have taken the AP exams, the IB exams. Mm-hmm. It's still a perk for them, though, not to have to deal with taking
just a
the class.
Less pressure.
Yeah.
Are we hearing backlash about grade point averages and
no
standings or anything?
No,
it's more
it
that
just
core
that issue. And I think because the kid, you know, I always find when the students take the time to bring these issues up, I really believe that, you know, we should do our best to listen to them and to have a conversation where these things come out and we can understand
who's
why
the
this
fact check at Verbeek High School.
Oh geez, Miss Vogel, the blonde.
How about if I personally talk with her and try and get some background?
Okay.
And I'd be glad to talk with the kids. I mean,
okay,
I want
great.
Them to know where we're coming from, and
right.
I don't mind listening, you know, to what they have to say, or Terry. But
no, I think it's valuable because now as we have this conversation and we realize what the Pandora's box we would be opening
exactly.
when we become curriculum specific,
right.
I don't think they are even thinking
sure.
about it in
yeah.
that context. So that's why these conversations
yeah.
are important, if anything, to give them the, you know, the follow-up so
mm-hmm.
they understand why the big
I
picture
agree.
Is in their little picture.
And quite frankly, it was just like the grading practices. We had the class president come and listen to all of the information, and it just helps for them to hear both sides of it. So
Okay. All right.
I
do have a B. Can I go forward, or would you prefer to continue the cycle since this one took some time? I'll bring it up the next go around.
Is it on the same type?
It's the same. It's pupil progression plan, but it's the grading practices piece. And I brought this up at the last board meeting, and we talked a little bit about it. And I still am concerned, and I've talked to Dr. Adams about this. I am still concerned. I don't disagree with the philosophy behind this. My concern is the implementation and the readiness of our teachers, of our students, and of our parents to embrace these changes that we're making. And they are a big deal when you get to the high school level, because it really is going to impact students. And today when I spoke to Dr. Adams, and I think all of you got the letter from Ms. Reinhardt, she made an interesting case, and I hadn't thought about it, the implication that it has. For example, if I'm a sophomore this year, I've been graded the old way my ninth grade year and my 10th grade year. My ninth and my 10th. And then going into my 11th and 12th, the grading is going to be more rigorous and my grades are going to go down. It's like what's happening with the cut scores. We don't have to even test our kids to see the impact the cut scores are going to have. We've had these higher grades, and then all of a sudden the cut scores are going to bring our grade down because they're more rigorous. And that's the challenge that we face when we look at how this is going to affect some of our students, that they've had the higher grade, the inflated grade, whatever you want to call it, and then all of a sudden we're more rigorous, and that's going to impact their overall average. So that's one piece of it that I know is a challenge to address, but I talked to Dr. Adams if there weren't any possibility of phasing it in or finding a way of it being implemented in such a way that it doesn't have such a tremendous impact on the students. So, the implementation piece I still have a hard time with, and I really don't think that it's meddling too much, because it is something that we approve as a board and that has a tremendous impact, especially on our high school students. The homework piece continues to need clarification, and that's something that, you know, is up to the superintendent and her staff to address, to make sure that everybody's on the same page in terms of homework. But I sent all of you an email that I got with a few attachments, and one of the things that I shared with Dr. Adams, these attachments, I don't know if any of you looked at them, they had student questions and answers, and this is specifically around homework, which actually would be useful to us also. But what I thought about was we should have something like this. general guidelines, teacher guidelines, parent questions and answers, and student questions and answers for our school community regarding these grading practices, because this is a big shift for us. We're going to change our report cards. So this is a big deal, and I think that because it's so important, we need to make sure that we implement it in such a way that it is successful and it doesn't hurt our students in any way, and it doesn't cause a lot of dissent and frustration amongst our teachers. So I brought it up again because I just wanted to know if anybody else had any concerns about this moving forward, because as you all know, we had to not implement it this year because we weren't ready, but it is still in our pupil progression plan.
Mrs. Disney.
Thanks.
Well, I think that the version of that grading practice that we've been talking about is really just touches the surface of what is behind all that strategy. And as I read deeper into it, what I learned was when you have classes where attendance is really important, for instance, your healthcare, your certified nursing assistant, and they miss the day on press contamination, and they miss the day on blood drawing, you know, you have seriously impacted their ability to function in that capacity. So building in attendance in the course syllabus is a way to make it part of the instructional and academic grade. So as our teachers learn, yes, there is building it into the syllabus. So as our teachers really start to work with it and start redesigning their syllabuses a little bit, I think that they're going to find that sometimes there are things that are behavior, but they're behavior that are directly linked to the academic piece of it, and they'll be able to make some adjustments in the way that the expectations are delivered.
And if I can build on what you were saying, the attendance piece that I think she's talking about is in the syllabus. The attendance is critical because you're doing some performance-based types of things during that time in which you would know, mm-hmm. you know, to be graded on. Just as in chorus, you are practicing, you are doing various things during that time. You can't miss 10 chorus practices and then show up for a concert. And so it's in different courses, it's built in different ways. You know, you have to be there to be able to meet the competencies of the class.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things is that there are many assumptions that are being made about what can happen. And that's always kind of the way when you're making some big changes like this. And so, you know, there are people that are genuinely concerned about it. And, you know, we're trying to be careful to address those issues. Homework keeps coming up, and I think that that is something that we will continue to look at closer and make sure everybody understands or tweak that so, you know, we have some consistency. But we are in year three talking about it and working through it. Are 100% of our teachers on board with it? No. That would not be fair to say that. Do the parents still need more information and the students? Yes. And those are pieces that have to, you know, have to happen. But we've got to take that big step and do it. You know, whether in the outcome it's chosen to be phased in, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think those are all things that can be put on the table and be discussed. But I think it... And she believes in it,
mm-hmm.
you know. She's told me over and over that you believe in it. It's just that you worry and make assumptions about what's going to happen because of the change.
Well, it's not that I'm making assumptions. It's that as I see us moving forward,
mm-hmm.
when I hear the concerns that teachers bring up, that's not an assumption on my part. That's an awareness that there needs to be more education. When I go to a SAC... SAC meeting, and I turn to the student sitting next to me who's going to be a junior next year, and I ask her, tell me, what do you know about the grading practices mm-hmm. for next year? And she asks me, what are you talking about? When I ask a parent, that's where my concern is, because
yeah.
I believe in the philosophy. I do believe that we need to be rigorous and we have to grade students on academic achievement, what they're
right.
learning. But there are some intricacies to it, and I think the example Ms. Disney gave in terms of attendance, with the grading policy, the understanding is that attendance cannot be part of the academic grade. It can be on the syllabus as you have to come to class, but you cannot be penalized like you have in the past in your academic grade for attendance, or am I misunderstanding?
No, you cannot lower a grade because of attendance. And now you can.
Okay.
But what I think what you were talking about is in the syllabus. See, the syllabus plays an important role in all of this, too, as to what the expectations are and when things are going to happen. In the HOSA classes, you have to be there or you're not going to do well because you are... You take these competency tests during the day, and Mrs. Jorgensen tells the students right up front, if you're not in this class, you're not going to get those skills, and you're not going to do well. So it's building attendance in by virtue of you have certain things to do. And what assumptions that I was talking about, Mrs. Jimenez, is that students won't do as well as they're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the worry. I think that's really the concern that parents have and students have, that if we say we're no longer going to give credit for checked off homework, that their grade's going to go down as a result of that. So I think that's the worry, and I think that's the kind of assumption I was talking about. But I don't pretend to assume that everybody knows about it, because I know that's not true.
I mean, just as a follow-up, because when you look at the work habit grade, it includes things like attendance, punctuality, preparedness, organization, homework completion, classwork, conduct, behavior. It includes a lot of things, for example, in a class like that where attendance is crucial. But attendance goes in the work habit grade.
Right.
The reflection of the lack of attendance is going to appear in the academic grade because they weren't there.
Right.
But the fear that some of these folks have is that when this becomes the work habit grade, that they're going to lose that authority over the students, because I don't have to be, attendance is not going to be discounted. Punctuality is not going to, I don't have to be prepared, you know, because currently, unfortunately, some of this is included in the grade, and that's what they're used to.
Yeah.
And so I've heard the word, we're going to be held hostage to student behaviors because they know it doesn't count. And that's part of the education that has to happen and the assumptions that have to be dispelled, and that is why I worry. Not because I don't disagree, but because some of those details still, the teachers need to internalize them, the students need to understand what that means, and then the parents. Because if your teachers don't support it, they're not going to support it to the parents, and they're not going to support it to the teachers. And then we're going to have a very uncomfortable situation for something that philosophically is the right thing to do. But again, it's implementation. And that's, you know, that's why I will keep bringing it up. Because, I mean, the evidence is we had to pull it. We didn't even pull it, but we had to say, no, we're not implementing it now because we weren't ready. I just want to make sure we're ready. That's where my concern is.
Is the, as an example, the four pieces that Collier County has, is that part of the
I mentioned that we have a Q&A going, but I like what they did about general parent and student. I think that's a really good idea. Yeah, myths. We've been trying to. We did it in the last staff development. We're trying to be sure that as we hear what people think it's going to be, we're trying to dispel the myths. We are putting together some a series of workshops over the educational TV for parents. One that we can show to students to kind of how long have you been doing this? What's the research say? How is this going to impact students? Principals will be expected to work with their own schools to get the information out. You kind of have to break it up into smaller pieces, you know, to really get the information out in an effective way.
And, you know, we had at one time 5 absences in ENF.
We did.
And we got rid of that.
We did.
Because we were saying that isn't necessarily a reflection of what you learned.
And it didn't work. The idea, see, we always think that punitive is going to make people change their behavior. And it doesn't. So what we ended up is there weren't fewer Fs at all. It actually increased over the 3-year period that we have it. So it's kind of a misconception that if you put that parent piece on.
And those S were sometimes punishing the student when it was the parent who was making the student stay home for maybe babysitting or something. And so we had students who were being punished when it was beyond their control.
Mm-hmm. And just one last thing. You know, when you were discussing this, you acknowledged that we still have some issues with the homework situation and clarity. What is going to be done to address that, to clarify what the purpose of homework is, how it will be graded, and so on?
Well, I think you sent us some additional information on just kind of what one group is, kind of break homework out into different areas, and I think that's good information that I can share with the Grading Practices Committee. They're meeting next week, so I just think the more detail and the more clarification, so I appreciate you sending that out to all of us. And
well, that was sent to me.
Yeah.
Well, and I think more than anything, remember when this came up last year, I voted against it, and the only reason I did is because I didn't think you had buy-in from your teacher. So I didn't think you had any buy-in. The district didn't have it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's got to.
Yeah, and we've been working on that this year. I mean, and you know, if the teachers are upset about it, then parents get upset about it too. So it's not 100% yet, but it's a lot better than it was.
To me, the missing piece that I hear over and over again is the why. I don't think that's really been explained. Why are we doing this? It's not even to me as much of the process or the procedure that we're using. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just don't understand why we're embarking on this overhaul of grading practices. And I think we need to, it's very complicated and there are advantages and disadvantages, but I think we really need to fine-tune an explanation for people across the board about why you believe this is positive for the school district. Right. I mean, there are pieces, I tell people I don't like the fact that, you know, kids can retake tests as part of the, you know, that's something philosophically that I have
there's nothing says that you must, you know,
right.
Again, we're talking about best practices,
that's,
and these are things to consider.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I know, and I have to, and that's why I have to sort of defer, you know, I'm not a curriculum specialist, obviously, and I know that there's research behind it, which I don't think...
Which has been presented to the teachers.
Right, but I think we need to get it even past, like what you said, get it out to the parents, so that they understand the why and the reasons that you think this is the best decision for the school district.
Yeah.
Is that it? Anybody else?
No, thank you.
It's tough.
It is tough.
Out, yeah.
It is tough. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's a very emotional topic.
Right.
It's emotional for students. It's emotional for parents.
Mrs. Disney?
Yes, one of my main concerns when we first read the change was what this was going to do for kids getting into colleges.
Right.
And I learned the hard way that the colleges really don't pay much attention to the grades that we're giving them now.
That's right.
They are evaluating each student's classes and their grade based on the curriculum, and they have...
Because of grade inflation.
That's right. And they are relying on recommendations and rigor in the type of classes. They're discounting a lot of the classes that are not core. Mm-hmm. They're just not paying attention to those grades at all, because A's in some of the electives are meaningless to them when it comes to the grades. They're recalculating grade point averages based on core classes. So we're not doing harm to our students, because there's already a system out there to look at how we're grading and what the grade really means.
And I guess the other thing, Board, is I would want you to be comfortable that these conversations are going on all across the United States. You know, this is something that we've been kind of ahead of the curve on in the last couple of years, but there is great conversation out there about, you know, raising rigor, having common core and common standards, and now how are you grading? What are your grading practices in terms of all of that? And if we know we're inflating grades, which admittedly I think everybody would mostly agree with that, why do we think we should continue the practice without looking seriously at giving students what they need to be successful at the next step? And so I think that's what we want to go with them. But implementation is critical.
And so just in closing, since we're kind of going to get ready to move on, so definitely we need buy-in. And this is already in the pupil progression plan. So it's kind of like a done deal, imperfections and all. So does this basically mean that we're going to, we're on track for this to be implemented in the new school year?
Yes.
Is that
whether it turns out that we have to tweak the pupil progression plan in August or September like we tend to do, you know, every year, whether it means we look at the implementation a little differently. We have all that latitude. Okay. That doesn't talk about implementation. It talks about, you know, we look at that language, you mm-hmm. know, that we have in there. So, yes, it's on track to go in. How there's always room for changing language in a pupil progression plan.
So it may not be exactly what we currently have. It may be tweaked.
It could be.
It could be phased in, theoretically.
Yeah.
But it's going to happen.
Yes.
In the new school year.
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else? Mr. McCain?
Take his name off the list.
Turn it all alternative minimum tax.
I do have one thing that I wanted to talk about, and I really should have talked to Dr. Adams, so it's really something I'd just like to get information about before.
Okay.
That came up during our conversations about Beachland.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know how many kids go to Beachland that are out of zone.
Okay.
And also, I want to look at our out-of-zone waiver process for the district. I've heard a lot of anecdotal, and it came up because of Beachland, which was why, you know, they really just... you're out of zone and you apply to the region and you get in.
Yeah.
So, in the conversation we were having at the information session about the capacity and all that,
mm-hmm.
But we can...
No, I happen to have it.
Oh, you do?
I'll tell you why. I actually had a parent that wrote me a letter about that.
Okay.
So I called him and I said, I just want to answer your questions that you have.
Okay.
And I said, we have 50 out-of-zone waivers to Beachland.
Okay.
50. Of the 50, 17 of them are employees' children.
Okay.
And, you know, employees' children get the opportunity to go to the class. And I said, in addition, you know, Beachland has been growing over the last few years because of lots of different reasons. You know that Beachland's been growing. And so I said, the other thing I want you to know is that right now there are 14 out-of-zone waivers in fifth grade and three in kindergarten. So... in the last few years, we've had fewer and fewer, and of the three, two of them are employees' children. So you see where I'm headed with this. Fewer and fewer children are going to Beachland because of out of zone, okay? And out of zone means you don't live in that zone and you have some special reason why you feel like you can go there. And so now they are really looking at pretty exceptional reasons because it's a very narrow window with the exception of the employees' children. Okay. The second piece to that is we are still under a desegregation order. So we do have other students that attend Beachland Elementary that don't live necessarily on the barrier island. So that's another factor. Okay. So when I talked to this person about it, because their information is that we were busing students from outside the district in, and number two, from around the district. And if you are on an out-of-zone waiver, you do not receive transportation. Okay? So out-of-zones, choice is a different story, but Beachland's not a choice school. Okay? But an out-of-zone waiver does not receive transportation. It has to be for an exceptional reason. Beachland has fewer and fewer. And after next year, I feel like the majority of them will probably be employees' children. The DSEG order does have children from outside the Beachland zone that attend. Okay? That what the person's response was, well, there are people that are not truthful about where they live.
I was going to say the same thing. You got a bunch of people using grandparents' addresses and things like that.
So my comment was, if you have any information that you'd like to share with anybody, then, you know, we're willing to listen. But
and Mr. McKinsey, do we have any, and not just for Beachland, but for the out-of-zone waiver process, does somebody just bring in the form and we grant it.
No.
Okay.
No, not
at
all.
That was the perception that I was given. Okay.
No, it's pretty much space criteria. There's set criteria on the waiver itself.
Right.
And if they appeal it, if they get no and they appeal it, there's a committee of people that meet together and review it to make a decision.
Okay.
So
with class size,
there's a process.
No waivers are granted unless there's space available.
Yeah.
Which was my hope. The stories I'd heard were people saying...
And one of the things that I would say about that is since years past, we've had hundreds of out-of-zone waivers. We are a school district of choice. I mean, we pretty much have allowed parents to go where they'd like to go.
Right.
But now, once you've been in there for 3 years, we're not apt to say you have to leave. So you kind of cycle, you're kind of cycling through kind of a large group, but it's getting smaller.
At Beachland in particular, is that okay?
Beachland in particular. Because it's full. They've grown.
Yes.
They need space for the children that live there.
Yes, exactly.
So,
okay.
Yeah. And you can never turn them away. You have to make space. So
right.
I think one of the arguments, well, why would you be adding more space to Beachland if... Yeah.
That's exactly how it all came about.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for having me. For even asking.
Yeah. Well, I just had that conversation,
okay,
so I was glad to answer it.
Mrs. Johnson.
Well, let's continue along these lines.
Okay.
As we discussed at our information session, and I appreciated very much, Dr. Adams, that you did have staff and Mr. Binkley there. I appreciate that we have embraced the city's proposal, their concept, not their proposal,
mm-hmm.
their concept. All of that. That being said, I believe at that information session, I also expressed a desire for us to have some real figures,
mm-hmm.
real dollar figures.
Mm-hmm.
It was confirmed that this has been a discussion that's been going on with consultants for 18 months. I understand there was quite a line of consultants. I'd really like to know who the consultants were who were there and who they represented and what their cost was. I also understand that there was the reference, and we've talked about that already, that the school was going to 750.
Mm-hmm.
And that I also understand that there are plans that have already been done for that.
Okay.
Unless I'm not reading correctly, I'd like to know where that is in our five-year plan for that expansion and why there's already been money expended for that. I would like to know. It's not in our five-year plan. So why is money being spent on that expansion? And I was very specific when I asked Mr. O'Connor for the city manager of Vero Beach. I said, are you sure that the references, now this is third hand to me,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't there, but are you sure that that wasn't a reference to the fact that this board has made it very clear we want to in any way possible do away with portables because
mm-hmm.
of just, it is not mm-hmm. our best teaching environment, and he said, no, that figure of 750,
mm-hmm.
not the 600 that's there,
that's right,
in portables. But no, the 750, and that the board had voted that the school was going to 750. I'm not
right.
looking to placing any blame. I'm not putting a finger. I want to know real value, real cost, real dollars that have been spent on that particular site for those
mm-hmm.
particular reasons. And I'm just very appreciative that everybody has embraced the
mm-hmm.
changes that we've made
mm-hmm.
there, and I applaud the fact that we're going to address that tonight prior to our public input, that we've already set a date, and I, of course, when we left our information session, I did call Mr. O'Connor because he knew we were having it,
mm-hmm.
and I did call and just briefly tell him what our discussion was,
mm-hmm.
and I thanked him again, and we just need to make certain we don't, I mean, common sense would tell me if I was working on a project within a municipality somewhere, I certainly would have made contact. If it had been in the county, I can guarantee you the contact would have been made with county government. So
okay.
that's my next issue.
Dr. Adams.
Yeah, I do want to say that I mentioned the other day that the figure of $113,000 for Dritten-Bass and engineering, what I'm going to ask them to do is send a memo to the board. We did ask there as well, were there any money spent on these other consultants, and the answer was no. But I will have it put in a memo to all of you.
Is that Mr. Binkley's group?
Mr. Binkley is Dritten-Bass.
He's Dritten-Bass and Associates, yeah. So the architect and engineers, Carter and Associates.
I'm feeling a little crazy today, so I'm going to agree with Mrs. Johnson and go a little bit further, because I don't know what the feeling was, but the fact that we had, and I, you know, said it jokingly to other people, but that we had a team of people working on that Beachland project, and none of them came up with the solution that the city did, which was mm-hmm. to use Daypalm and Mockingbird, was almost, and I'm not saying it to you, Dr. Evans, I'm saying yeah. that our team was almost a joke. And, you know, I'm not trying to be rude, but, you know, it was like we had 10 people working on this, and then, you know, you get somebody who walks in, and there's the solution. So, you know, there's a pattern, over since you become superintendent, of these issues that were, the board has been placed in the situation of being very reactive because of facilities. And I'm not going to lie, you know, I'm saying it, I think we're all saying the same thing, but, you know, it was Osceola. It was Dodgertown. It was Beachland. And we're the ones, we're being thrown into these positions that, number one, we're not aware of. And number two, I'm really questioning the competency of the advice you're getting and the recommendations that are being made to the board. And, I'm saying the Beachland thing just blew me away. You know, for such a great staff that you have, you know, for the city to be the ones to give us that solution, I think does a really big disservice to you. And I think we really need to look at this, you know, from the perspective of the board and the money that we're spending and the direction that we're going in, but also look at the pattern. And that's what bothers me. It's been a pattern now of, you know, this and then, you know, statements that are made where we get called from a reporter about the expansion of Beachland, and, you know, because that was represented to them during the meeting. And we need, you know, it's really becoming a problem. So I don't, and I'm just saying, I feel like it's an appropriate time to bring that up. Okay.
And if there have been dollars expended on expansion, I think the board needs to know that.
Okay.
On planning for expansion. Yeah. The board needs
I'll
to know
see
that.
I'll see if it's encumbered in that same number.
I would really yeah. appreciate that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Disney?
Yeah, one of the colloquialisms that I resent from the community is that we keep hearing we did this Taj Mahal building.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know this board and you, we want to have safe, efficient mm-hmm. buildings mm-hmm. that are conducive to learning, but none of us ever asked for a Taj Mahal.
That's right.
And I'm afraid now, as Mr. Pegler said, the pattern has led the community to believe this, because we do not look at low-impact solutions first. And low-impact solutions like the Beachland traffic routing. Is it Storm Grove, I think, that has on-grass parking? Is it Storm Grove?
Mm-hmm.
That's a low-impact solution. Mm-hmm. Less asphalt, it's cooler. I mean, there's just so many good things about it. And I know it takes the right environment, it mm-hmm. takes dry ground and all that, but the low-impact solutions are not presented to us.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that is really what our role needs to be, is present us different solutions and let us choose the one that's most palatable to our budget, to our community, to our learning, to the aesthetics of our community.
It's just a difficult, you know. Yeah.
We're trying to change some of the procedures so that other staff know what's happening prior to information going to the public as well. So I hear what you're saying.
Okay. I just, you know, I don't want to, and what you, Mrs. Disney is saying, you know, pardon me then, I don't want to micro, I just
yeah.
want you to give me a recommendation
yeah.
and I can
yeah.
approve.
Right.
But I also, you know, I don't want it to be like all the kids in the class covering for the one kid that's not doing
yeah.
homework. I mean, to be fair, that's
a good way to
talk about you, Mr.
So that was my, I won't go on any further. Anybody else on that?
I'm going to bring up Osceola.
Do you want to do it? Okay. Okay.
I'll wait.
Was that Mrs. I chimed in on yours. I'm sorry. Mrs. Disney.
Thank you. Years ago, before I was on the board, I was a member of a long-range planning committee that was put together by facilities, and it was a large committee. There were more than 15 of us. There were engineers and builders and accountants and city planners. It was just such a
municipalities were all represented.
Right. Okay. Wide variety of talent, and they sat and listened to our 5-year plan, and they gave us some capital plan, and gave recommendations on the direction we might go in. And I was hoping that if I could get some support from the board, that we could put a committee like that together again as we face the needs assessment of the schools. We're going to go out and take a look at whether or not we need to close schools or where we need to build, and put this committee back together again, because this committee, I mean, maybe my view is inflated because I was a member of it, but I think this committee did a great service.
What time period was that? Like, what kind of facilities did you look at? I'm trying to remember when that was.
Well, they're planning Storm Grove. Should they build Storm Grove Middle? Yeah, it was during that time, the planning of Storm Grove. It was before 2006.
Okay. Was it the comprehensive plan that they were going to do with the land out there?
That was part of it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because Storm Grove had another group of people working on mm-hmm. that, of which, you know, I was a part of that.
Dwayne Weiss was on the committee, Mark Mulcher. Does that ring any bells to you?
But I'll go back. Let me go back and dig up a little bit of information.
Long Range Planning Advisory Committee.
Okay.
And if not a district committee, perhaps as a board committee.
Johnson.
And I do see great value in that, but I don't want that to in any ways circumvent what we have promised we are going mm-hmm. to do this summer, which is take a big picture mm-hmm. view of facilities. We need to know each facility, what's there, you know. I'm not going to go back into the discussion mm-hmm. about Osceola and Thompson, but we need to know what facilities would be appropriate. We need to look at consolidation. We need to look at possible charters. We need to look at all of those kinds of things. And
that's exactly what I'm talking about, to convene that committee to listen to this.
To listen to what we're doing?
Yes.
And what is their task going to be?
They can give us their best thinking on it.
So that is something different completely as far as the charge of our land use and acquisition committee?
Yes.
I vaguely remember that committee, but I don't. I also remember
it's
us.
An ad hoc committee. You call it when you need it.
Yeah, right. Okay, right. So there should be minutes, and we should have. There should be a description. I'd be interested in that before
okay.
we go move
okay.
forward with the forming.
I'll find
committee.
That information for you.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Similar committee as part of your school concurrency interlocal agreement. There were various advisory groups that were supposed to be involved in that.
Do you think it was connected to that?
No, it wasn't connected to that. And that group hears what we've already decided and then sort of ratifies it.
And that's a requirement in the land use, plan at the county level. And I just go and listen. I just go sit. I actually sit on the side because I do attend the other things. But I'd like to know the...
Judy will have to help me with that.
I'd like the guiding structure.
2006.
It was prior to that. I was elected in 2006, and I was a member of this committee prior to being elected.
So it would have been Roger Deering time frame, probably.
Yeah.
Dr. Deering and mm-hmm. I doubt if it would have been formed under Dr. Pritchett because he was
no, it was before that. Pritchett came when I was on the board. It was Dr. Deering and then probably a little bit of Mr.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Mr. Glad to do that.
Anything else? All right. I'm missing minutes.
Yes. I put on the agenda Juvenile Justice Council, but what I wanted to do was really bring up the policy that we adopted, policy 6.141, and ask if the board were interested in revisiting that policy. I, as one board member, have sat down and reread this, and it's one of those things, you can't go back and change your votes, but I kept asking myself, what was I thinking when I voted to approve this? And the reason being, when I went back and looked at the original policy 6.14, that policy was looking at when a student committed a felony. And we took, with 6.141, we took it further, and instead of a felony, we made it any crime. And we included language that reads, when the student is arrested, they're going to be immediately suspended from participation for a charge of a juvenile crime or offense. They're going to be immediately suspended from participation in all FHSAA sanctioned athletic activities, and it lists, some of the issues. But one of the sentences in there says, this shall include entry into a pretrial diversion program, which program entry shall be treated as adjudication under this policy. So if you have a kid that's going into a pretrial diversion program and you're trying to give them a chance to clean up their act, you're still just suspending them. You're not giving that kid any hope in terms of being able to move forward here. And I just feel that we're talking about young people that should be given a chance to learn from their mistakes, and we've made this policy so punitive that there is no hope for these kids. And sadly, for many of our students, it's the athletics, it's the arts, it's those types of areas that keep them engaged in school, and here is a student who is engaged through athletics, and we're just denying them an opportunity for rehabilitation and the punitiveness of this. I'm not saying that we don't need a consequence. We need a consequence. But I think that this policy is a little over the top, because we go from the focus on the original, the statute focuses a felony, and we made it any crime, blanket any crime. And I don't know all the ins and outs, but in rereading it, I think it might be worth the consideration of the board to revisit it at a round table formally or as part of a workshop to make sure that what we intended is what's happening and that there aren't unintended consequences that we weren't anticipating, because, you know, we move forward. We want to reach out to the students. We want to support them, and this doesn't do that, I feel. And I don't think we've had any cases yet, but it would be... You know, we want to prevent having this set up and a student getting caught in this that may really need a chance at hope versus just plain punishment.
Mrs. Johnson?
Yes, first of all, and if you were on the prevailing side, you can put that on the agenda anytime you want for it to be revisited. Mm-hmm. If you were not on the prevailing side, you would need someone else to present that for it to be agended again. That being said, I think we probably need Misty Agresta to research this for us, but I believe the impetus for this came from FHSAA. As far as I'm not saying it was, but someone besides me needs to research it, because I'm not going to rely on my memory. I can tell you that.
I do recall hearing that this was actually the result of a situation where the board didn't have policy to keep a student from participating, and I don't know the particulars, and so this was developed to give the district teeth for making these decisions. So again, policy shouldn't be made for one situation, and maybe that's where we got carried away.
May I? Mrs. Johnson, in response to your comment, the Florida High School Athletic Association doesn't have a specific policy that addresses something that happens to a student at the local jurisdiction. They support these types of policies, but they allow the local school district to say, what is your standard here? What is your community standard for students and their behaviors? And then whatever you establish, the high school FHSAA will support whatever the local school board puts in place. So they're not going to require this or anything else, but they will be supportive of the local standards established.
Mrs. Disney.
Thank you. I attended a workshop last spring that Dr. Deering spoke at, and he was talking, telling stories about students who were suspended or arrested who came directly from incarceration. In fact, right, yeah. One student was delivered by police car to a football game and changed from his orange jumpsuit mm-hmm. to his uniform. And the concern being that they're trying to raise the standard of behavior on the athletic teams, and they felt that by allowing that, they were undermining authority and undermining the ability for coaches to raise that standard. So if the policy that we've approved is overkill, we should talk about it. But that was where that started, was that we were concerned about students being arrested, being detained, or being in a facility mm-hmm. and coming out and having all the same rights, mm-hmm. and that being detrimental to the student body as a whole.
Yeah, I would just say that that's, you know, that's a particular case and a particular situation, but that's not necessarily the case for each of these, you know, that we may encounter. And if we don't have any flexibility, I just think, it, particularly when we're trying to do diversion for these students, if we're just so black and white and everybody's punished, we don't have a chance for those gradations. And, you know, in those, I'm sure in that case, that was the appropriate thing to do. But not every case is going to be that extreme case. And that's where we have to be careful that maybe there is an unintended consequence. And, you know, I just think it's a matter of maybe revisiting it and making sure that this is indeed the policy that we want to stick with.
Well, I think part of that policy, I think, Roger's point with the Florida High School Activities Association was to take, it was encouraging districts to take, to don't put your coaches in that situation.
Yeah.
Coaches have, you know, in many places, very high, you know, it can be a very high profile, yeah. and if you, yeah. it was to kind of mm-hmm. you know, take the pressure off them and take it out of their hands and make it district-wide. Yeah.
And that goes back to the consistency. I would not want to leave that in the hands of... there needs to be some kind of guidelines, whether mm-hmm. they need to be as restrictive of this as not. I certainly think if you want to bring it up at a round table for that particular discussion and see what other counties are doing. I just think sometimes we bend over backwards for those who break the rules, and we don't recognize those who are following the rules because they're afraid they're going to lose something along the way. So, I mean, that's just my own personal mm-hmm. agenda.
I had suggested to Mrs. Jimenez that I might like to talk to the athletic directors. They have a big picture type of thing. I think that they have vested interest in good citizenry and all of that, but you know, it might be a good idea to get their viewpoint, and is there some room for tweaking the rule. So if you guys think that's a good idea, I'd like to talk to the two athletic directors and have them reread this to see if they would have any suggestions or support, or, you know, they might think, no, we need this. But
well,
they might also have some suggestions. Yeah, but they have a lot of cases to draw from.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
You know, especially with the juvenile justice system and my experience in it, you know, part of, I wouldn't be averse to revisiting it. I guess my concern about it overall is that not necessarily punitive, but they're playing a sport as a privilege. And I don't want to, you know, even in the juvenile justice system, which, you know, I spent several years day-to-day dealing with, you know, there are going to be consequences, and kids need to understand that, especially at that stage, to their actions. And, you know, I'm not saying I wouldn't look at it again, but we also need to be cognizant of the fact that we want to create a real, some of it has to be grounded in the real world. And, you know, maybe there is a difference, however, between, a kid who shoplifts a pack of gum mm-hmm. and, you know, a battery. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, so I'm not disagreeing. We need to find some balance between it, and I don't know, especially in light of the athletic directors in the system, for the kids that don't break the law, because that's a reality as well, that we're, considering them too, and the fact that playing sports in particular, is a privilege. So that's, I have mixed emotions about it.
You know, I would just throw into the mix that I understand what you're saying. I think the comparison to the real world is probably not a good one, because one of the things we see in the real world is that athletes and movie stars get away with whatever they want, and they're not necessarily the best role models for children. But having said that, I think when we look at these types of issues, we need to be mindful that we're talking about adolescence, and that, you know, over and over the research, when you look at the research on brain development, it's not until you're 24, 25, and even then, that your brain is fully developed. So we have young people, yes, playing a sport is a privilege, but we could say education is a privilege. There are countries and societies where not every child has access to education, but I think we have to be mindful that they can make impulsive choices, they can make bad choices, and there are felonies and there are crimes and there are different levels of it, but you know, our job, part of what we do, is to help these young people learn, move forward, and maybe learn from their mistakes. So while I understand that we need to have parameters, I also need to be mindful, I think we need to be mindful that, you know, young people make mistakes. Even your AP IB students can make bad choices, and it's how we deal with it and how we help them overcome them. And I just hope that a policy like this has that kind of leeway to give kids that haven't done things that are extreme an opportunity to move forward. But if you all are willing, maybe Dr. Adams can speak to the athletic directors and we can follow it up at a future roundtable to see if there's any...
Is there anyone on the Juvenile Justice Council from the State Attorney's Office who's the Juvenile Crimes Prosecutor in the Juvenile Division?
Could I ask Ms. Warrior?
Oh, sure.
And she would know if that's okay.
On the Juvenile Justice Council, is there an Assistant State Attorney in the Juvenile Division?
The Juvenile is there, and I also ran this past the Chief Assistant and shared... a letter that he came back, you know, in terms of looking at the policy, and I think he also talked with your attorney.
Because, okay, he did.
And there is in the council, Lynn Sloan,
okay. I'd just be curious to know what the, how they feel about it.
Well, I can share with you, this is the letter from the Chief Assistant State Attorney, and, He's part of the letter says, I also read the new rule in the statutes, and he writes the statutes in the email, and then he says, I would humbly suggest that rule 6.141 goes well beyond the language quoted above. The question I have asked is whether there is some other statutory provision which is being relied upon by the school board in support of the published rule. I'll let you know what I find out. So this chief assistant believes that it is a little above and beyond.
Mr. Gresko?
And I had the opportunity to speak with the gentleman. He did call me. He and I spoke by phone. And we went through the general statutory authority of a school board to establish behavior rules for their students. And so once he and I had kind of talked through the general statutory framework for a school board, he understood how the school board could take one statute and essentially heighten the penalty, if you will, for the crime, but for the behavior of the student. So he understood the legal basis, but I think from just not a legal perspective, but from a policy perspective, that particular council felt the rule went too far in their opinion.
And the reason I asked was just, you know, oftentimes the disposition that we would give to a juvenile would include, you know, you can go to school, you can go to your athletics, and then go home immediately if they were on some type of, you know, probation. So in that event, you know, if the state attorney's office is okay with it and it's not a significant crime, that's why I have mixed emotions about it. You are doing something positive because you're enabling the kid to get into a routine, but they're being monitored.
Right.
So I don't want to go on anymore. Take up
So what I'm hearing is it's go ahead and talk with the two athletic directors if they have anything, and you know, for bad choices there are consequences, but you know, we're not trying to hold it over their head forever, and are there ways for them to
felony, I would feel different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's a different part of it.
Mrs. Disney.
Thanks. Yeah, but what I don't want you to hear is that this is a done deal.
Yeah.
Right.
I heard that.
You know, no matter what my personal feelings are about it, I also recognize that I am elected by the people of the county. The people of the county expect all of us to reflect in our votes what we hear from them, what we hear them saying that they want the mores and standards to be for our for our school district. For instance, kids in Dade County don't get suspended for cussing at a teacher. It's something that it's a battle they don't fight anymore, and we still do that. So it's up to us to decide where we want to draw our line. Do we want to draw our line at breaking school rules? Do we want to draw them at misdemeanors? Do we want to allow them one felony? Do we want to allow them a non-violent
That's
felony?
Exactly right.
You know, it's up to us to decide where we want to draw our line. So I think, you know, we deserve, this issue deserves us to do some more research, deserves us to hear from our athletic directors, see what's happening in other counties. But the bottom line is, no matter what anyone else thinks about how it's too tough, if that is a standard for this county, that's, you know, it's up to us to reflect that in our vote.
Right, but I think in this particular case, this isn't, this didn't arise from any community concern that came before the board. This was something that was done in some ways reactively to our inability to, because we didn't have policy. So yes, we need to reflect the mores of our community, but this hasn't really, this is not the product of that.
Just don't bring the miniature horse back up. We're done with that. Mr. McDaniel, nothing. Mrs. Stang asked, this is a scheduling matter, I just don't want to forget. May 15th at 9 a.m., we have our board discussion, which is to review Chapter 1 board policies for NEOLA, I think.
Yes.
And we can do the Vero Beach Elementary walkthrough at 1, or right, we're scheduled from 9 to 12. Do we want to do the VB walkthrough immediately after that, or at 1, or how do you, just so she can do the notice?
Okay.
Mrs. Johnson?
9 to 12 is our NEOLA conference. I would think right after that we could certainly go do our walkthrough. I think if we do too much earlier than that, we're going to rush the walkthrough. We're not going to take time with it. It'll be just a quick in and out, and I don't really want to be there at 7:30 in the morning to walk through.
Would you rather do it at noon or at 1 o'clock? Is, you know, take a lunch break?
I actually would rather just go ahead and leave and go do it and get it done.
How does everybody else feel?
And get it done.
So we'll do it noon on the 15th of evening walkthrough.
May.
Thanks.
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mrs. Johnson.
Okay. I spoke about factual information, not assumptions, but factual information for costs for Beachland. I'd like to speak about factual information, as I did at our information session, about Osceola. And I wanted to do it this time because I definitely wanted to go on the record. You know, our information sessions are structured differently. Costs associated with the Dodgertown proposal, costs associated with actual costs, factual costs for Osceola's move. I had mentioned to you, Dr. Adams.
How you said Dodgertown.
Dodgertown. Dodgertown was a proposal for Osceola to move to Dodgertown, and there were costs involved in that.
Okay.
Right?
Right, but you don't want me to go back to that.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I want to know what the cost was involved with that proposal. Carter Associates did some...
We're not talking about
I
am talking about what actually...
Okay.
I'm sorry, I thought I said that.
I misunderstood.
Actual costs of the proposal for Dodge. We keep talking about all these, this work that was done, all these people who've been involved, all these people who've been paid to do something, and we're not going to go into the issue of Dodgertown direction. We're just going to go with the thing, money that has been spent. Money that has been spent. There is a real cost for the Thompson activities that took place at Thompson, the VPK moving to moving over to Vero Beach Elementary, the actual cost of adult education. There, I mean, that's all going to have to be redone. That was all done at to make Thompson an appropriate site for, you know, all those classes that were taking place. I think those are real dollar figures that we need to be discussing. And I understand there was, you know, I'm kind of going to go with my little pouty comment, but I'm going to go there anyway. You know, I really, you know, there's going to be significant costs for us to do the satelliting of food to Osceola and for the expansion of the cafeteria. And I, there's also been costs associated with the parking and different proposals that have come. And there have been, there's been more than one proposal proposed. All of those cost money. Every time we ask a consultant to do something different than what they just did, there's a bill.
That's right.
And we have had a huge number of bills relating to this Osceola going to Thompson, or being moved, period. So I think we need to be aware of that.
Okay.
And not, you know, and we have had, when asking questions, we've been told such things as, well, there's, you know, that's in the budget. We have money for that in the budget. That's not what I want. I don't want to know it's in the budget. I want to know what the cost was.
Okay.
So, because we mentioned it in the information session, we had a nice little discussion on it. And I know that that the actual issue of the parking, I don't want to steal someone else's thunder. They'd already said they were going to mention it later. Not yet. So.
Now, but there are ongoing costs. We are in the middle of the project. So are you asking for what has been spent to date? Or
yes, ma'am.
Do you want, okay.
What was spent on consultants coming in and doing the Dodgertown proposal and those kinds of things.
Okay.
We won't talk about processes. That's something that, that falls under another venue, which we will go into, I'm sure, upcoming.
Anyone else?
I'm just hope I'm saying that as one person. We either I'm just one person. I need, we either have support for that information coming forward or not. It's just one person giving a comment. That's not a board directive.
I support it.
Now, you know, we can do costs every month if that's what you want. I'm not sure that that's the purpose of this. The purpose is to know what actually has been will have been spent on. When everything, you know, when we get the print, when we get adult ed moved.
I'm not looking for you to have a crystal ball and tell what the final bill is going to be on that.
And I can't do that.
I just want to know what we have spent to date
so far
on this issue.
Got it.
And I think it's going to be considerable. And if not, I will be pleasantly surprised.
Good.
The efficiency of
the
what's
efficiency
being done,
is
I think, Mrs. Johnson.
Absolutely.
You know, where our resources are being spent and how.
Sure.
Okay. Mrs. Disney.
I think the item that I wanted to talk about was the Osceola parking, but Claudia has been doing a lot of research, so perhaps we'll defer, to her.
Well, I'll start the conversation and y'all can chime in because I don't think I'll get it.
That's not appropriate when you when you've done that.
Well, you gave me a lot of the information.
Right. And I think one of the things, and I think this goes back to some of the issues that were discussed before. You know, we've been having a lot of concerns and a lot of feedback from parents about the issue with the parking spaces. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this could have been preempted if from the beginning somebody had figured out how many spaces we're starting with and how many spaces we're moving towards. And the fact that that information is not readily available and that when you ask for it, you find out nobody has even compiled it, even though we have all of these plans already and we're good to go, we didn't even begin with our baseline. that is, again, of concern. And it's something that really impacts the district, because a lot of these concerns that people are bringing up could have been addressed in a different way if, for example, as a board member, I didn't have to rely on the street version of what people are saying, because unfortunately I had nothing to go on. Now we know that we actually have 103 parking spaces at Osceola, and according to the plans, they will be getting 124. And again, there's a nuance there, because when folks went out and counted the parking spaces at Osceola, the current Osceola, there are 103 paved spaces. When we look at the plan for the new Osceola, there are, we are told that there are 123 spaces, but there's a good chunk of them that are on grass. So if somebody were to do the count, the number would be different. And so the bottom line is, you know, I ask for how many spaces they have. I want to know the total number of spaces so I can understand why people are upset, because they feel that there aren't enough parking spaces. I don't want to get into second guessing, okay, well, you said paved, but now I want to know how many on the grass, and then I bet you the other issue is going to be how many are stabilized coquina. You know, we shouldn't have to do that. And I think that's the, that type of lack of information is just, it's not good. It makes it difficult for us to move forward. So I think that that's something that the superintendent addresses with her staff. Mm-hmm. But I just felt that that needed to be said, because that lack of information has just caused a lot of angst for so many people. I had an opportunity to speak to Dr. Adams today, and I guess one of the first things for me, I was disappointed, because I had requested the original plan, talking about, you know, there are so many versions of things before we finally get what we approve, and there was an original plan that came before this plan, and I had wanted an opportunity to see that, to get a sense for what was there and, you know, what we're working with now. But since that is not available for whatever reason, and for example, why is it that that information. I spoke to one of your staff, and okay. I asked for it.
Okay. And I mean facilities, or
it was facilities.
Okay.
And I asked for it because I think it's important to look at all the information. But having said that, when we look at the parking, and here I've got like two copies of them. Mm,
thank you.
That we can, and this is another one. But when you look at the way we've done the loop, I have a concern about the fact that the parking that's in the first part of the loop when you enter, there are two versions of this. That's either parent parking or faculty parking. I understand that that's faculty parking. And the parking that's in the North Campus is also supposed to be faculty parking. So, in effect, parent parking is just a little over 20 parking spaces in this plan. My concern is when you go to Osceola right now, and I know it's a different campus and it's not all faced in, so that dynamic is going to impact the behavior in terms of what parents do with their children. A lot of parents walk there in the afternoon, they park their cars and they go in and they get their children. The way this is set up, there is no place, really, very small, there's very little space for parents to park and go to the classrooms the way they've been doing for years at Osceola. So there's going to have to be a change in behavior. And I'm just concerned that we're going to be bombarded with parents. This loop doesn't have an exit. When you go in, if you are trying to get parking, you go in, there's no parking, you come back out, and you have to stay in the loop all the way until you get to the school and you come out the other end. And, you know, that could be an issue at some point if that traffic doesn't move quickly enough. But, you know, I'm just wondering if we've really thought out if this is what's going to work for these parents. I would hate for us on the first day of school to have parents trying to figure out where they're going to park. I mean, on the first day of school, it's going to be crazy anyway because it's new. But once people are familiar with the way this is done, mm-hmm. Is this idea that everyone's just going to follow the loop really going to work. That's one of the concerns. And then the other concern is that there's a second phase to this, which is reworking that north parking. And my understanding is, my recommendation would be that we just do the whole thing. But because everything has been, I mean, tonight we're voting to basically approve the company based on this plan. There's really no time to revisit this and look at that second phase. And we really couldn't do it, because if we were to say we want to revisit this, we would put the whole process on hold. And we need that school to be ready in August. So this is what we've got, and I just want to make sure that we understand that we're asking for a change in behavior in terms of how these parents park. And I don't think that, you know, this does not accommodate what they're used to. And I just want to make sure that we all understand that they're even going to have fewer spaces to park their cars here than they currently have at Osceola, because they've only got those little spots in the second loop right near the school.
Mrs. Disney.
No. When this was presented to us, was it last Tuesday? Mm-hmm. I thought I heard that the existing staff parking over where the existing cafeteria is,
yes,
was staff parking, and then the Coquina was staff parking.
And either. That's also staff.
Okay, but the front, both front parking lots are available for visitors. Is that what we heard?
Mrs. Jimenez is the one that told me that this was over here was the faculty.
Well, that's what
that was not my understanding
staff.
At
that,
all.
That was not my understanding mm-hmm. either. And if this is parent parking, then I think we have a problem, because there's no safe way to get those kids. How are they going to get to their classes? The parents have to park here and walk here, and there's no sidewalk. There's no infrastructure for parents to safely get their kids to their classes. But what I heard yesterday was that this was faculty parking, so that makes it a non-issue.
Yeah.
Well, Thompson's staff parked just in that one area,
right,
and didn't have the Coquina. So is it that many more people that they would need a third parking area?
No, I think it will relieve some of the parking on this side because there is the Coquina.
Right.
Okay, that will relieve some of it. And as a matter of fact, they're looking at some, Mrs. Roberts has asked for some other areas to consider for staff parking, again, releasing some spots for parents. Board, what I would want you to know is that this is the parent pickup that you're approving. It has to be phased. You can't do everything at one time. The other unique, this is going to be very different for Osceola parents. You have a single point of entry. On one hand, that's an inconvenience for people who've been able to park everywhere and merge into the school from different places. This is a school that is surrounded by a fence, has a single point of entry, which means that you've got to come in, everybody is converging to one area. So Mrs. Jimenez is right. It is going to be a change in behavior. So it's going to be getting used to dropping off your child in a different way. Everybody is aware that there needs to be more parking, but we can't do it all at one time. So the important thing is this parent loop is very similar to other parent loops, and you don't have people coming in and out of crossing over the loop. You have parent walking across. If you look at Citrus, they have a big parking lot on the other side, and people walk through the traffic to get from that parking area over to the school. It's pretty slow-moving traffic there, but you need Osceola needs a long loop there to get all of the parents
Treasure Coast
in there.
Treasure Coast walk across the parent loop also.
Yeah, they all, yes.
All you do is it takes paint. And you make a crosswalk.
Yes.
Right on the parent loop, and you have an assistant out there. I don't think that's a big deal.
So we're not at, yeah.
It's
very common in terms of how this is set up, but it is the parent loop area is a good plan. I believe that. We have had many people look at it. It hasn't somebody that hasn't brought it to us without getting lots of feedback. I understand that they don't feel like they have sufficient parking. And we agree. We have a field for overflow parking, which the good news to us is that we didn't have to put coquina in there. We didn't have to add anything. It's very solid. We agree that there will be need to be more parking in the future. So there is work being done to look at the future, but we need to get phase one done first. And we don't want to start doing new things right now because it won't get done before the first day of school. So I want the board to know that we're addressing Osceola's concern about parking, but they're never going to have all the parking that they want. They don't have... You can say you've got grassy parking over there, but they are not designated parking spots. It's just people parking in the grass. These are designated parking. It's low-impact parking that you were just talking about. It's not paved, but it is designated for parking. So that's what that little grassy area is designed for, is parking. So there are parking spots there. But we do need to consider their concerns. We need to know that it's going to not all be done this year, but we do have overflow areas, you know, and we do know that it's going to look very different right now in terms of how they drop their children off and how far they have to walk and where they're going to be able to enter the school. So more and more in the United States, that's what schools are looking at: single entry, fenced in schools. And that was a concern that the Osceola parents had about security as well. So with that comes some inconveniences and things that we used to be able to do, just like we can't do now. Just like what's going to happen up front. You know, somebody's going to have to buzz you in every time you want to come in. Unfortunately, that we have to change our behavior because of that.
You know, another one is I drop off at Glendale on tax season almost every day, and we do the same thing. You have to walk across the carpet. Yeah.
Yes, and can you address the, we've got 17 parking spaces that are proposed on street after hour parking, which would not really help.
I agree.
In that situation.
We were going to try and get that designation changed so that there could be parking during the day there.
Okay. And then just another follow-up, and this is a concern because we look at the economic situation. Is there any way we can put it in writing that this is a first phase and that there is a second phase and that, you know, there will be an opportunity for, you know, these transition committees and for parents to give input once they're on campus? Because that's the other concern, that, you know, we can't do the whole thing because there's just not enough time.
Right.
But the concern is with the economy and everything that we're going to say there's a second phase, and I don't think there's trust out there that it's really going to happen.
Well, what I told the parents that came to see me is that we have a five-year capital plan that has to come before the board. And each year, we as well have the opportunity to make sure that projects are in this plan. And that happens in late spring, you know, early summer, that we begin to plan. So those are the times when you and I have input in terms of making sure that there are some things that get in. Right now, we're hopeful that the cafeteria is going to be able to save some dollars that we can even put toward the next one and get it started a little earlier. So, you know, there's a commitment to do that. That parking on that other side, it just needs to be redone. It just, you know, needs to be redone. And we were talking today, that loop, there may be some tweaking to that after a year once people have had a chance to use it. But the five-year capital plan is the way that we get projects into the pipeline.
Can we just... Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Johnson, I forgot. Go ahead.
You even asked me.
I know, and then
I
forgot.
First of all, our parents are pretty savvy. They're gonna understand what makes this work, and I will guarantee you that, as with any building where you put in sidewalks, when you see where the grass is trodden, you will understand that that's not the way you should have done it. Right. That being said, I think this, and I do understand, we're trying to make certain that this is going to be ready for students and
that's very important.
Come August, I understand that. And I think...
Well, let me ask you a question relating to this, and then I'll move from there. Is there any of the materials that are currently at the old Verbiage Elementary that are going to be going over to Thompson?
The one thing I know for sure is the media furniture, which was relatively, you know, was the latest that we did. That's it.
That's the last
there
thing
may be
we did as far as Verbiage Elementary is concerned. Right?
Pardon?
That's the last thing we purchased for Verbiage.
It was. That was the last renovation that we did there.
Okay. And but you do know that's going. Is there anything else going?
I'm not sure.
AV equipment, any of that stuff that's going over from the old Verbiage Elementary?
Not that I'm aware of.
Could we find out on that?
Sure. Are you talking about, like, document cameras and things like that?
I say that because part of that school was used for different things. Different parts of it we were used for different things. There is definitely a rumor going around that a lot of that is going to Verbiage Elementary.
Yeah.
And if it's not going there, I'd like to know where it is going and how it's going to be used throughout the throughout the district.
Can I just tell you what we are doing? I mean, we already have cameras and projectors in Thompson. That's already there in every class. What we are doing is adding additional drops and buying new CPUs for the classrooms.
Okay.
We are taking all the computers that aren't part of the refresh cycle from Osceola over. We're buying all new teacher furniture, or, you know, teacher desks for the teachers at Osceola Magnet. There are several, you know, kind of new pieces, and making sure that they're current. We're building a new, you know, a new science lab. We're tearing it down a wall and expanding that. We've added to the stage. We've actually made the stage bigger. So we've really made a lot of accommodations to the wishes of the group from Osceola, but I don't think there's much of anything going from BBE.
Okay, I would just like to know that, because that is definitely a rumor that's out there.
Sure.
I've heard it from more than one person, so I assume it's definitely out there. The facade of the school. I know we had talked at one point about changing the facade, taking out Thompson from the tiles when you walk in.
Yes, they already have a plan for that.
Okay.
Susan does.
And that's going to be ready when children arrive. Mm-hmm. They're not going to arrive and walk in the front door and it's going to say Thompson.
No. And actually they're bringing their sign over, their other sign, the marquee.
Okay.
They're actually bringing that from Osceola to Thompson, and then there was some discussion, do we want to use the one from us that's currently at Thompson, put it that up by the parent loop for announcements, so that was being discussed, but we're actually bringing the Osceola, they preferred that.
And I know you and I had talked about this, but for both Verbiage Elementary and Osceola, I would hope that we, when the really old Verbiage Elementary was torn down, they did not. They had, I understand, some sort of a identifying plaque. It was not like what we have today. But I do hope that those vanity plaques, because it is the school, it is not the location, that for both Verbiage Elementary and Osceola, that we do have those. Mm-hmm. And unlike Storm Grove, I think that we definitely need to have a ceremony. We need to have and I'm not just talking about the people who worked on it, sitting up on a stage, and everybody who worked on it, who did whatever, being identified. There needs to be a ceremony, and I just feel I think it's very important for us to recognize, for both those schools, but especially for Osceola, because of the circumstances being so unique, that we make it an event. I'm not talking about the adults. I'm talking about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make certain that it is embracing for those kids, and you know, I think that's very, very important.
Speaking of that, Mrs. Swanson had talked about having a ceremony, kind of a closing ceremony, a final walkthrough at VBE, and she was asking. I said, "Well, when?" And she was talking about possibly the last day of school for students. So I wondered if that you might consider that for students and the board and for people to come to the campus and have a walkthrough.
The new VBE.
That was the new VBE. I'm talking about the old VBE. It's kind of a ceremony for closing the school.
Set up a night for parents and former students to come and just walk through the old VBE.
Okay.
She's already set up a night for that. I don't know what the night is.
Okay. I have to check that out because
that's already set.
Because I asked her what the date was, and she said, well, it depends on the board. And so.
No, I believe that's already set.
Okay, good.
As far as the date for... But I'm a firm believer in celebrations and ceremonies, and especially with this, because there's been so much angst with Osceola. I would... not saying it isn't angst that was deserved or understandable, but I just would like for it to be made as good as possible. What are we doing with any kind of landscaping at that school?
They actually have a beautification committee.
Okay.
They have a landscape architect that's a parent. And so we're trying to use some of the dollars that we have to set aside a certain amount of dollars. I mean, I think they're trying to come up with a plan, but they are in action. You know, it's going on the campus, and we're supporting that.
Okay.
We have trying to. There's some trees, some oak trees that we heard that are in a mitigation area. That we're trying to move some trees of decent size into some areas. Clearing of some other areas. There's a little pine area that's going to be cleaned out. The beautification committee is talking about a pond in an area in the middle there. You know how when you go in, there's that area. They're talking about. They're already working on a plan for a little pond there. So there's lots of pieces and parts going on.
We're
going to
do a little statue of
me
waving.
Going to do this.
You.
Oh, I don't think so.
Can I just?
Yes.
So is it possible to find out actually what that parking is?
Whether it's faculty
or not.
For tonight.
Sure. So that we have clarity. And I guess if I heard correctly, then we're pretty much locked into this because there's no time to do anything else if we want a timeline to be met. And we're willing to, in the future, make any changes that need to be made if there are any issues with the loop and the parking.
I'm not willing to say that.
Well, no, I mean, no, just
what we did say is we could look at it and tweak if necessary. Yeah,
because I think that what happens when we do things like this, that, you know, we're going to have this project and then we're going to have to go back. The project is completed and then we may have to make changes. And then the question is always going to be, was that the best use of money? When you had the project, why didn't you do what you had to do?
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the only reason why I would be concerned, because it's the due diligence of making sure we're doing something that's costly.
And again, I just want to say there were a lot of people involved in this. It's very clear to me how you're feeling, and I get it, and I'm listening, and I hear all of that. But I want you to trust on this that there have been lots of people involved in this process, and a lot of questions have been asked about it. And Roberts has been involved in every step of the way. She has been wonderful about taking all of this back to the school. Engineers have looked at it, so this is a parent loop. We know that there has to be more done, and I appreciate their concern about that. But we only have that street to deal with for the loop. You know, we don't really have a lot of choices about how to do it.
Mrs. Johnson.
And I understand what you just said, and I applaud you for what you just said. But I think the reality is that so often we have, throughout this process, we have not made the best decisions as a district or a staff.
And I know that's where you're coming from.
It is where I'm coming from, Dr. Adams. And it is please do not think that I am laying all of this on your plate. Right. Please, and I've said that before. I will continue to say that. This you inherited. I said that months and months and months ago. You inherited what we're dealing with. Yeah. And I also know that you have to rely, either you rely on your staff and they give you accurate information, or you change your staff.
Ms. Jimenez.
That's hard to follow, but
I was going to join you.
Because there is a pattern. And, I
and that's my job.
We can't keep having
that job.
Thank you.
I don't want that job. It's my job.
This conversation. It happened with Dodger. It's happening again.
It's my job.
We can keep, I don't want to have this conversation.
It is your job.
From now.
Thank you.
It is your job. So that's why I go on. It is your job.
But you get it.
Who was that? You? I know Mr. McCain has something.
Oh, he's got something for me. Go back.
I have another issue I want to bring up real quick.
This one lane goes to two, right? Yeah. Which gives it a speed.
Right. It's a facilities issue again. How come? And it seriously is, but it's not. How come we didn't move at the support services complex, there's mm-hmm. so much space that's available. Why didn't we move the ESE offices there, and why do we have them in the portables at Dodgertown?
There was not enough space. Okay. We actually looked at
there
that.
There wasn't?
No. No.
Okay.
No.
It's such a shame because they can't.
We would have had to split them further.
Okay.
We did look at, I mean, actually there was a request for about three or four people to be able to go out there, but it was just splitting them further, which was
that's
not a good idea.
That
okay.
is not good.
Okay.
And I'm not sure whether you're aware, but we are going to bring the executive director and another over here to the district office. So there's greater continuity between the curriculum department having being able to work directly with ESC. And
where then will Kim McQuarrison will be over at
VB? She'll be at VB.
What about the like the speech the speech pathologists and all that?
There will be a certain amount still at VB. Yes, and then the rest will be at
Dodgertown.
Yes.
Okay.
And so for the services for the pre-K ESC, or for the not the pre-K ESC, but those that are in the community
right.
that receive services,
right.
they will go to Dodgertown.
Okay. Mrs. Johnson.
Only because Mr. Pegler brought it up.
Oh, jeez.
I'm just saying. And I apologize, Dr. Adams, because I usually try not to surprise you.
Yeah, I should.
You're not always real happy with the fact that I pursue it, but I try not to at least give you a warning, and I didn't on this. I do have concerns about waiting so long to advertise. I understand the memo we received about the ESE, the director for ESE, and some other positions. I believe that email we got said other positions that'll be needed, and the timing, because these people are at another. These people are they're employed in other school districts, and this may not be the best time to have filled that position. I'm not saying we need to fill it today, but I just hope we're not going to also have people who have already made their commitments and their plans for next year, and then we start advertising.
Right. You're talking about the ESC executive director.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. It had been advertised.
Oh.
Yes. It had been advertised inside and out.
I apologize.
What happens, particularly in the February-March time frame, you don't get people being willing to apply.
Sure.
So the timing is to just do it right at the end of the school year when people are ready to move or ready to think about making a move. So that's
and
why.
That's okay. I just want to make sure that
that's
we don't set ourselves up for not having someone who will be ready to come on board when we need them to come on board.
That we had advertised.
Okay. All right.
When is Larry Gehr's last day?
The 28th of April.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Mr. McCain, is that? Do we want to do committee reports or anything? It's on the agenda.
Be nice. Do this to him next time.
Should we skip the committee reports today and do them at our next roundtable?
Sure.
Or Ms. Jimenez, did you?
No, that's fine. I can save
anything I have
later.
You sure? Okay. Because we nothing else. All right. See y'all tonight.
Claudia, I checked the budget. I do have
Oh, great. Thank you. So I will speak with Mr. Morse.
And we were talking about going over Tuesday night after the board meeting.